morning, everyone. Okay, so I entitled the talk today, The Believing Parent. We're not talking about Emunah and Hashem specifically, although that's always with us. Believing in your child and believing in yourself. So I'd just like to go through a couple ideas, give us a better idea of what it means to believe in your child, what it means to believe in yourself. So one of the destructive things that parents and teachers and all adults do from time to time out of frustration with their children is they give them a label. You're so lazy, you're so whatever. I don't want to get into too many examples. Rather than talking about what they did wrong, we immediately run to globalize it, to generalize it, and give the child a label. I once heard a very interesting chat about why it is that Moshe Rabbeinu, he had two incidents where he was at a situation, a crisis situation, where there was no water for Klal Yisrael. Right? The first time, Parsha Shalach, right after they got out of, they passed through the Yamsuf, there was no water, and you know, he was told to hit the rock, but it was a whole confrontation and a very stressful situation between him and Klal Yisrael. And the second time, where after Miriam passed away 40 years later, and again there was no water, Hashem told him to speak to the rock, and he hit the rock. So one of the explanations why the second time he had such a serious consequence from Hashem that he could not enter Eretz Yisrael as a result of that, what he did at that point, and the first time when there was no recorded consequence that Moshe got as a result of his confrontation with Klal Yisrael. Because in the second time, the Pasuk tells us, he says, Shimuna Hamorim, listen, you rebellious ones. And since he labeled them, he gave them a label, so that was the reason why for that he was punished. So we have to be very careful to not label. Easy way to keep in mind this idea comes from, I think, from Stephen Covey, labeling is disabling. Give a child a label, you basically are telling the child that this is who he is, this is who she is, and because you are the all-powerful, all-knowing parent, at least the younger children, so they're going to believe you. You tell the child that she's lazy, okay, so I don't come on time and I don't do what I'm supposed to do because I'm lazy. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. A way to understand this is just to imagine you have a 12-month-old, you know, just entering the toddling age, and the child very shakily stands up and then takes a step and flops on the floor. And so imagine if we reacted to that the way we do when the kids are older. You know, you see this kid trying to walk. It's like, forget it. You're not strong enough. You don't have a good enough sense of balance. You don't even, muscle tone's not developed. And you're never going to be able to walk. You can't do this. Nobody in their right mind would ever do such a thing. But why is it that a child perseveres when they can't really walk, they can't really do anything? It's because we are encouraging. Right? Child takes that one crazy step, it flops immediately, we're cheering and we're hollering and we're celebrating. Because we know that if we believe in the child's gonna be able to do it. And that should be the paradigm of how we treat most challenges that children confront, rather than seeing where they are right this second, and you can't do it. forget it, don't even try, you're just gonna, you know, who knows what you'll break, you know, while you're falling over, who knows, you're gonna hurt yourself. All of these things that we say in different contexts, so we don't say it when they're very young. Because it's universal that the child is gonna, you know, be able to advance from where he is right now. That he only continues to try because he is encouraged. I don't know that children have any cognitive awareness of the fact that they can't walk, but just imagine if they could, and maybe to some extent they do. You have this child, he's this little tiny thing, and he lives in a world of very big people, and everybody is rushing around, and he's just like, how am I ever going to be able to do that? How am I going to be able to walk? I'm not big like them, I'm not strong like them. So to overcome that, so Hashem has implanted in every child the natural ability to be curious and to try and to want to be big and to. But there's a certain point at which, if we're not careful and we're constantly putting a child down or giving them a label and we don't believe in them, so they're going to stop. They're going to stop trying. And the greatest gift we can give them is to show them that that they're not what they could be labeled as because of their behavior right now. That's their behavior right now. That's what they're doing at this moment. That doesn't define. It doesn't define who they are. Yes.
How do you balance that with realistic expectations? Like, let's say you have a child that's really like a mess. Like, they're really, really disorganized. Like, how do you give them how do you believe in that child if they really just don't have those skills?
Okay, so you have to have the key word I think here is realistic. What is realistic? Perhaps the parent's frustration is causing the parent to not be so objective. But you have whatever, you have 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 kids, and this one is like just not getting with the program. So is this child really not capable? Is the child have to be taught a different way? Or is it just you're letting out your frustration? So the first thing is you have to really know what it is that they can't do. And everybody can progress, it just doesn't come so naturally. Some children are naturally strong in academics, some are naturally strong in sports, some are naturally strong socially. But some need extra help to get there. But if it's a basic life skill, certainly don't give up. They're gonna need it, by hook or by crook, they're gonna need to develop it. Each area, I guess, of their growth is has to be looked at, specifically. But we have to know ourselves also that how much of this is our frustration that, it was so easy with the first three. Oh, come, this is so hard. And we have to, understand that everybody's different. Okay. There's a famous pasuk in Mishle. Kemayim hapanim lapanim kein lev adam la'adam. And Gemara on this, there's many mefarshim. What it means, the words of the pasuk are like water is to water, so is a face to a face. And what that means is water, body of water, when it's still, acts as a mirror. So when you look in a mirror, so the mirror is an exact replicate of what is in front of the mirror. You look into the mirror, you smile, the person in the mirror is smiling. You frown, the person is frowning. It's an exact reaction, not even a reaction, it's exactly what's happening in your face is coming back from the mirror. So the pasuk is telling us is kein lev adam la'adam, so too, the feelings that you project from your heart, the emotions that you project towards another person, they are exactly reflected back to you. And if you can convey a feeling of love for a child, so then feelings of love will be aroused within the child for you. If you are angry and you're frustrated, that's what's going to come back to you. So the Ralbag just expands it a little bit to say that what your perception of the child is going to be the child's perception of themselves, which is why it's so important to have this confidence in the children and to convey that. And part of that, I should say, another twist on it is that you have to believe that your children love you. And there are many times throughout every day that we would question whether our children really love us. When they don't listen to us, when they lash out angrily, you're the worst mother in the world, I hate you. All of those things that children are saying from time to time when they are frustrated, when they're angry, they speak with chutzpah. So what is our reaction to that? Do we think like, my children don't like me? Or do we understand that, whatever, they have their own issues, they're stuck in their own, they're not thinking about they're not thinking about us, they're thinking about themselves. It's always the issue. We're not discussing punishment today, but in the area of punishment, so often we see what they did is so terrible, and we give them a very big punishment, but like all they understand is like we gave them a big punishment. They're not learning any lessons. So it's another whole topic. So here too. So we're now also, we're on the receiving end of a child who's lashing out, and we many times like think, I overstepped my, maybe I'm losing my relationship with the child. Maybe he doesn't really love me. And we have to realize that we have to believe in our children's love for us, because they do love us. They're upset right now. They're totally focused on their own needs. I mean, I want that red candy, and I want it now because I'm 4 years old, and that's what a four-year-old wants. And I'm the one who's saying they can't have it, so they don't have the proper verbiage to explain, I have this great, lust for a red candy, and you're standing in my way, and it's really not so terrible. And I brush my teeth twice a day, so it's not gonna. They can't say any of that stuff. All they can say is, "I hate you," because they don't want. But they're not expressing what's really in their heart. So we have to be. We have to likewise understand we're not the target. Because if we feel that we're the target, then we're going to react inappropriately to the children because we're going to start personalizing their behavior towards us. So if we understand that what the children are saying and what they're doing is not a personal attack on us, so we'll be able to much more effectively respond in the appropriate way to their behavior. Okay. Now, when you give rebuke to a child, you always, which you have to do, that's parents' job, but you always have to, always is also not an exact term, but you should try to always convey your belief in the child's ability to do the thing that they just were unable to do, or to refrain from what they just didn't refrain from doing. I know you do a very responsible job of watching your little sister, so I'm really surprised that she almost got lost. You're very upset because they acted irresponsibly. They're not irresponsible. Don't call them irresponsible. They acted irresponsibly. So you have to convey to them that they have to be more responsible. Just say it in a way. I know you can be. You can be responsible. You're somebody who takes your responsibility seriously. I've seen it in the past. I know this about you. In that way, you are focusing on what just happened, and you're not conveying any kind of a lowering of your belief in the child, because they still have your full confidence. And because much of when we give a child a responsibility, so part of it is, it's great that we can delegate some of our responsibilities, but we are trying to teach them to be responsible people. And the way to teach them to be responsible is to show that you believe in their abilities. And you give a child a task, you have to give them the job. If you're constantly reminding them, constantly helping them out, bailing them out, so then you're not conveying a real belief in their ability to succeed. Let's say you have an older child whose job is to pick up the younger siblings at the end of the school day. Okay, and whatever. So what are you going to do? You're going to put a note in their backpack every day to remind them, or you're going to, and when they forget, you rush in and you tell them, this is your job. Tell me what you need to remind you if you need a reminder. Otherwise, it's your responsibility. Once it's your responsibility, because there's a whole, many chapters by itself about how to give a child responsibility. But the point of giving them a responsibility and then letting them figure out how to handle it is based largely on your belief in their abilities. Believing in them, conveying that belief in them, that will develop that sense of responsibility. And many times we fall short in that area because, A, we are genuinely a little nervous about everybody's welfare. So we have to understand when we give a responsibility that it's got to be something that the children can handle. It's not, you're not asking a two-year-old to take the glasses from the table and put them in the sink. It's got to be age appropriate that they can manage it. But when they get to that age, convey to them your belief in their ability to do it. You can say, I know you can do what I'm asking you. You come to me if you need my help. But this is what I need. Spell it out. This is what you have to do. You have to go to this when you're dismissed from school. You go to this place over here. Okay. You ask the teacher for your brother and your sister. You pick them up. Make sure your brother's wearing his yarmulke. Make sure they have their lunch bag. And then walk with them over here. Whatever it is, give them the tools, but then they're on their own. It's very important to show that belief, and that will help develop their sense of responsibility. Okay. Now, the hardest part of all of this is to change the way we react to our children. Because we react instinctively, reflexively, based upon our upbringing, based upon whatever we've experienced until now. We grew up in a home where it was explosive, where it was immediate reactions, angry reactions. So that's that's how we've got that inside us. In order to be able to retrain ourselves and to try to check our reactions, like you said, that the child says, I hate you, it triggers something in everybody, in every parent, it's going to trigger something. The question is, at that split second, how are you reacting? So you really need to try to suspend your feeling and get into the mind of the child. And this is, if you go to a business seminar, they will tell you also in a negotiation, listen. It's not about what you say, it's what the other person is saying and what's really behind their words. So it's certainly true by a child that they're conveying something very important and very revealing when they're talking. And you have to, what you should try to, just change the verbiage is hard, but to change your mindset. I hear these words coming from my child. Okay. I'll deal with my feelings and my reactions in a minute. Right now, what is my child saying to me? What are they trying to convey? What are they feeling? And so when we need to, we correct them, we redirect them, we may need to give them a punishment, but we should always acknowledge what they're feeling. I see you're very angry because your sister, you know, your baby sister just knocked over your Lego tower. Hitting is not permitted. Just acknowledge why they're upset. Think about what they're upset about. Try to, in your instinctive reaction, focus on that. Your feelings, I acknowledge your feelings. I validate your feelings. They're real feelings. You're entitled to your feelings. I still believe you and you, and you're wonderful, but you can't do this. So that's getting to another point. Rabbi Orlovich has a statement. He says, I can think about how I feel, or I can think about how you feel. I can't do both at the same time. So it's very important to put our reactions on the side for as long as we can, focus on the child, thinking about how you're feeling. Think about how you're feeling. I understand why you feel that way. Well, let's deal with the behavior. And that way the child will accept what you have to say much more readily, because many times what they do is they just want to be understood. You talk to children and they, you know, they got this problem and that problem and that problem. And you just tell them, it must be very frustrating for you to have this situation. And that's all they need to hear. And they, you know, they run off and they're, you know, they're good for however long, until the next time. But it's all part of believing in a child. Just to give you an extreme example of what it means to focus on somebody else's thinking. It's a sad story. A friend of mine was a Hatzalah member, so it was. This story was written up by Rabbi Krohn in one of his books. So Rabbi Matul Weinberg Hatzalah was Rosh Yeshiva from Montreal. He was. He had a massive heart attack. They rushed him to the hospital. He passed away. So it was my friends, the one who was there, who had to tell his Rebbetzin, who obviously knew that the situation was very serious, but he had to tell her that he had passed away. So Rebbetzin, I have to tell you that your husband was nifted. So the way he tells the story is that she was silent for about 10 seconds. And then she said, it must have been so hard for you to tell me that. That's an extreme example. But it illustrates how a person can hold their own feelings in abeyance and focus on the other person. So with children, it won't be that drastic, that dramatic, but it's the same concept. You try to focus on what they are, and that will help them to their belief in themselves. Okay, I'm just going to try to quickly cover believing in yourself, which is equally, if not more important. Many parents have the challenge and the difficulty and the discomfort of becoming authority figures, especially in today's world where until 75 years ago, I think, it was universally accepted that the parents were the boss in the home, the parents were the boss. You know, the kid came home from school complaining that the teacher hit him, so the parent would hit him again and then discuss it with them. You know, so nowadays, we know that it doesn't work that way. So it's probably better this way. However, it also has the downside that the authority of the parent and the ability of us parents to view ourselves as authorities and as, hush of a people who are worthy of the children's respect. That's been greatly downgraded and degraded, and many of us just feel uncomfortable being in that position. So we should understand that Hashem has placed in the Aseres Hadibros the halachos of kibud av v'aim, of honoring parents, of fearing parents, and even though it's not to make us feel like, oh, we're so important, but we should take that out of this also. The laws of kibud av v'aim are for the children's sake, so that they will understand the concept of authority. And parents are the ones in their young lives who are their authorities, whether the parents want to be or not, and then they transfer that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we have to act as authorities and understand that Hashem has given us the, he's anointed us as those, as the authorities in our children's lives. And you know, we're the ones entrusted with our children and with their development. Hashem put our children in the world at this precise time with these precise parents. Obviously, we have a very, very important mission. So we have to understand that it's very, what our, the role that we play is extremely significant. We're very important people. And we have to be able to convey that to others. Rav Pam Zatzal has a very interesting, last week's parsha about the Metzora, about the leprosy and plague of leprosy, that when it has to be a Kohen who checks to see, you know, whether the person is, it's a real nega according to the Torah or it's not. And the Rashi, Gemara, they all explain that no Kohen can make the determination for themselves, because we have a statement that Ein Adam Roeh Es Nigei Atzmo, a person can't discern your own shortcomings, right? If it's a nega, it's a shortcoming, we don't see it. Like, it's a temporary little thing. Well, yes, it's a temporary little thing, but really, I'm a good person. Everybody else, the same thing will be, you know, a very big blemish. That's a different story. But Palm says, the flip side is also true, that we are not so capable of seeing our mileage, of seeing our own strength, of seeing our own abilities. And it's a problem that we are, you know, we don't see ourselves as others see us. We are much more distinguished and important and dignified and everything else than we give ourselves credit for. So we have to see ourselves in that way. Especially young parents have that. It's getting worse. They have a very hard time seeing themselves as this authority. You have to see yourself that way. And if you can't do it for yourself, you have to do it for your children, because children need strong, confident, stable parents, because that's their world. Their whole world is only as stable and secure as their parents make it. So if their parents are very wishy-washy, the parents are also act impulsively, or the parents act in a way that shows that they're not really in control and they can't really be relied upon, and they say one thing and they do a different thing. So that makes it very, very difficult for the child. So for your child's sake, you have to believe in yourself and you have to carry yourself in a way that, my word that is it. And if you don't really believe it, so you have to fake it. Just again, to compare to a different realm of parenting, I don't think there's any parent alive that, if the child is sick, very sick, and the doctor says, this is the medicine that you got to give them to get them to be, returned to health. So they're going to talk to the child, the doctor really thinks that you should take this medicine. And I know you don't like it, but you know what? We'll take you out for ice cream if you take this medicine. We'll take a trip to Disney if you. We don't negotiate, we don't sweet talk, we take the kid, we hold him down, we force the medicine into them. That is normal. So we have to realize that when it comes to developing other parts of the child, it's as important to not be wishy-washy and compromise. I'm not saying to force them down, and the comparison ends there. But the idea is that we have to be forthright, clear. This is something that we've determined is important. We need it. We understand it. We're not going to allow our 5-year-old or 6-year-old, maybe and younger either, start flipping the light switch on Shabbos. They'll get a rise out of us. So we're going to take very strong action, because we just can't have this. So there are many other parts of what the children do that we have to be very clear, very forthright. They're testing us to see how serious we are about what we say. We always call them aggressive researchers. They see it if you're weak, so they want to see what they can get away with. So it has to be that you are helping them understand that there are walls around them, the things they can and cannot do. And that's a parent that doesn't believe in themselves is going to have a very, very difficult time with that. And just to just conclude that you need to be able to convey with conviction that I expect you to follow my instructions. You give a child an instruction. People always wonder, like, now you have one teacher can walk into a classroom and everybody is, you know, following instructions and, you know, they're doing exactly what the teacher asks, and others is the opposite. One of the keys, perhaps the most important key, is that the effective teacher just conveys the calm conviction that you're going to do what I say. No special tricks, no, they don't have to be 6 foot six and menacing, but that doesn't, it can be 4 foot four. If you come in and you just convey that calm conviction that you're going to do what I ask you to do, you know, which is, if you don't accomplish that when you say, pick up your socks, okay? Or, you know, put your shoes away, please. All of that conveys weakness, conveys doubt as to whether they're going to listen to you. You need to convey, I said so, you're going to do it. Not easy, you may have to fake it, but you do it consistently, and they will learn that after the time goes on, they will learn that you mean what you say what you mean, and they'll be much, much happier and more productive.
Good stuff over there.